With less than a year to go before the 2016 New Hampshire primary, we're starting to see more and more visits from potential hopefuls, so far mostly on the Republican side. Some of them are well known to political watchers, such as the former governor of Texas, Rick Perry, who's in the state this week. Others are looking to boost their name recognition with voters. One of them is Carly Fiorina. The former CEO of Hewlett-Packard ran for the U.S. Senate in California several years ago. Since then, she's led a microfinance company and led the Unlocking Potential Political Action Committee, which aims to counter charges from Democrats that GOP policies are unfriendly to women. I talked with Carly Fiorina after she spoke at a Politics and Eggs event this week in Bedford. We started our conversation with a look at income inequality and the inequality of opportunity, concern that children from better-off families have significantly more opportunities than those born into families with fewer resources. She pointed toward changes in education policy as one potential solution.
We have to give every parent a real choice as to how and where their child is educated. The facts are these. The Department of Education has grown every year for 40 years under both Republicans and Democrats, and the quality of our education has continued to decline. Ergo, how much money you spend in Washington doesn't seem to have a lot to do with the quality of education you provide. The truth is, every child wants to learn. Every child can learn. The most important thing in a child's education is a good teacher and an engaged parent. And we have to give parents the choices and the options and create real accountability and competition, frankly, in our educational system so that parents and children have those choices. So that's a policy change, as well as changes in local government. Obviously, there are federal government policy changes that have to be made so that we incent people to work more and work harder instead of making it difficult for them to work more because they will lose benefits upon which they have come to depend.
You have been fairly outspoken about abortion, for example. I wonder what you make of a potential campaign in a state like New Hampshire where many Republicans support abortion rights.
We know what's interesting is there is already a lot of common ground on this subject. The vast majority of women, the vast majority of young people, the vast majority of Americans agree that abortion after 5 months, late-term abortion for any reason at all, should be outlawed. I know the Democratic Party likes to make a lot of the divisions around the issue of abortion. In fact, there is a great deal of common ground. And so I think we ought to grab that common ground and make progress.
You've been behind an effort to try to, among other things, bring more female voters into the Republican fold. Is it simply a case of how you talk about abortion rather than necessarily what the particular stance on abortion is that might attract more women into the party or to support the party's candidates?
Well, believe it or not, most women don't start with abortion as their most important issue. And I think that's where the Democratic Party has made a mistake with its whole war on women rhetoric. So the truth is, every issue is a woman's issue. Women balance the checkbooks. Women make the health care decisions. Women make the education decisions. Women care about the economy. Women care about national security. We talk with women about every issue that matters to them, and women want to engage on all those issues that matter to them, to potentially their families, to America and their communities.
Candidates who haven't served in Congress or in the cabinet often have to work harder to make a case that they can handle the foreign policy and security pieces of the presidency. How would you hope to make your case, were you to launch that campaign, that you could handle an issue like what's going on now in Ukraine and Russia's involvement there?
Well, I have traveled many hundreds of thousands of miles around the globe. I know most of the world leaders on the stage today. I have met Vladimir Putin. And having met him, I certainly know that the only way his ambition will be softened is if he sees resolve on the other side. And I think what we need to recognize is that American leadership is needed in the world. When we are not leading, and we are not today, the world is a more dangerous and a more tragic place. But it's also true that every problem represents an opportunity. The opportunity that Vladimir Putin represents is the opportunity to rebuild the NATO alliance, to convince our European colleagues that they must invest more in their own defense, to reinvest in Eastern European defenses, which inexplicably to me, President Obama unilaterally withdrew. Likewise, ISIS represents an opportunity. It's a terrible problem. It's an evil that has to be defeated. But you have people in the Middle East, Jordan, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Iraq, Egypt, even Israel, who know it is a common enemy and who can be brought together to help defeat that enemy, but only with American leadership. I served as well as the chairman of the advisory board at the Central Intelligence Agency for several years and have served also on the Defense Business Board. And so, you know, we need to be clear-eyed about where we are. China is a state sponsor of cyber warfare, and they have been for a decade or more. So is Russia. So is North Korea. Leadership in this dangerous world requires realism about who our adversaries are and who our allies are, courage, of course, to take the right choices, and moral clarity. You know, there's some things that are gray, but there's some things that are black and white. ISIS, for example, is black and white. They are evil. They must be defeated.
It sounds like you're saying that your vision of leadership on the world stage would involve essentially bringing some of our partners that may be more reluctant to go further into something like arming the Ukrainian government with lethal resources against these Russian-backed forces to convince them to go along with these policies that they may not on their own feel comfortable with?
Well, look, I think that the United States always has to act in our own best self-interest, whether or not we can convince others to join us. So in the case of Putin and Ukraine, of course we should arm the rebels with lethal aid. We should have done that quite a while ago. We should have enacted punishing sanctions with or without the Europeans way back when Putin took Crimea. We shouldn't have waited until he had shot a civilian aircraft out of the sky. And so, yes, leadership involves convincing and compelling others to join us, but leadership also requires us to stand on our own if necessary to protect our own self-interest.
According to National Journal, former New Hampshire Governor John H. Sununu said when he met with you, one of the pieces of advice he gave, and he gave the same advice to others, is to decide early about whether to get into the 2016 race. And we have seen some hopefuls start to take those steps. Do you have a timetable in mind at this point as to when you might make a decision?
Well, I certainly have a tentative timetable. You know, things can change, but I am traveling, meeting people, gauging support. And I think I will probably make an announcement should I decide that way in, you know, maybe the late April kind of time frame.
Carly Fiorina, thanks so much for your time today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Carly Fiorina is best known as the former CEO of Hewlett-Packard and says she's seriously considering a run for the Republican nomination for president in 2016. You can find more of our coverage of presidential hopefuls as they come through the Granite State at nhpr.org.